It's after 6, so I can get started. All right, so you ready? Okay, all right. Welcome to the CEN Show, a platform where we learn from the world community. I'm your host, Rosaki Mascagni, and on the panel this evening, we have Professor Amin-Ra and Brother Ernest McBride Jr. We usually have the Fab Five here, so two of us is missing, and hopefully they join us a little bit later. This evening, we have a brother that's an author, and from what I could tell, he has a lot going on and all positive. And he was recommended by Brother Kwabena, one of our team members. And I can't wait to hear what he has to tell us this evening. It's Brother Ajay out of New York. Brother Ajay, I'm pleased to have you on this show, and I'm eager to hear what you got to tell us. Welcome, and you can go ahead and knock us out with that great information you got, because I know it's good. He's a brother's an author too. So welcome, brother.
Thank you, Brother Mascagni, Baba Ernest. Shout out to Community Education Network. If y'all not watching, if y'all watching this, you better tell everybody they need to get on this train, because the train, once it's gone, it's gone. Get on it now. This to get this Black-centered, African-centered, new African-centered information at a time when we desperately need to fight demoralization of Black people and this very fascist-leaning political climate. So shows or networks like the Community Education Network are very important. They're not to be taken lightly. Oh, that's just this channel. This is very important. We have independent Black media to be able to give our unique narrative. So I'll be quick to introduce myself. My name is Brother Ajay Taimba. I am born and raised in Harlem, New York. I still live in the neighborhood of my birth. Most people would know it as Sugar Hill Harlem or Hampton Heights Harlem. I am an educator, author, and community organizer. And I guess because I do those things, it was only natural that I would venture into the social media space. So I also have a few YouTube channels, the overtly political channel, which is an extension of the organization myself and my queen co-founded in 2016. Is Harlem Liberation School. That's the one most people would know me from. And what we are is a political education center. For people to understand what we are, what we do, I'm gonna take you back to New York City in the 80s. So when I was coming up in the 80s, I'm a teenager, right? And I would go to places. I lived maybe 3 minutes from City College. I lived 2 minutes from 145th Street and Convent. So I would go to First World Alliance meetings that were sometimes held at City College, mostly at 145th and Convent, this little church. And at First World Alliance, I got to hear some of our heavyweights at the time. I was pretty young, and I probably didn't fully appreciate all that knowledge and wisdom they were kicking, but Dr. Ben was there, Dr. Clark, and Miss Wilson. Remember Ani, when she was known as Donna Richards, and just James Small, Professor James Small, so many of our greats. And then, of course, I would go to 125th Street and speak to the book vendors, and we'd be having conversations for hours. Many of them had been in the Republic of New Africa, or they were former Black Panther Party members. So that was a whole university in and of itself. And then one of my great Jegners, who has transitioned quite some time ago, Mama Una Molzak, who was the proprietor of Liberation Bookstore in Harlem. And so I got to, as a young guy, I got to really get around to a number of political spaces and learn a lot. And in building Harlem Liberation School, it came from me going to all these panel discussions I was invited to. I'm going to say the year was 2015. And for some reason that year, people were inviting me to all these panel discussions. And I was really frustrated that people, the leadership, did not know the basic stuff you would think leaders of a Black nationalist or Pan-Africanist organization would know. And so I'm on these panel discussions, like, no, that's not correct. And that puts you in a weird position. To have to say, no, that's not correct. You can bang on Christianity all you want, but do understand Garvey was Christian. Understand that now. Understand that Africans don't just take what the white man gives us and just drink it uncritically. We take it and we Africanize it. So yeah, there were people like Nat Turner who was Christian, Marcus Garvey, Martin Delaney, So I was getting frustrated and saddened, like, man, we don't seem to be where we need to be in terms of the political education. So rather than being upset about it, I did something about it. And that's when we started Harlem Liberation School. So we're all about political education. And actually, I think that's why I chose this as a topic, because I think people, it's one of those terms like, I love you. People say that a lot. And I don't know if we really think about what that means on the ground. What does love mean on the ground? Right. So what does political education mean? So that's what I wanted to talk about tonight. I'm hoping I can get through it quickly, but thoroughly. And maybe we have a Q&A. I don't know what your format is, but I would certainly be open to that if you have time for that and want to do that. So let me start by saying that when we talk about political education, that's really not an option. It's not a luxury. It's not like, oh, that's a nice idea. Maybe we'll, no. If we're serious about building power and changing our condition, then we have to have political education. Without it, movements become reactionary and backwards, disorganized, and very easy to mislead and manipulate, which is partly what's going on right as I'm speaking in New York City and in cities across the country. People are getting misinformation as they're heavily relying on social media for their information, and you know how that goes. That's a toss-up when you do that. We all would agree that most Black people do not have a solid political education, and in fact, most Black people don't have a solid education, period. And we know that that's not accidental; that that's by design. Most of us, or anyone who's going through public education, would probably say, yeah, there's a lot of things I didn't learn. A lot of people say they came into their consciousness when they were grown-ups, when they went to off to college, or when they went to another city, or they had an uncle or auntie who taught them. Very few people will tell you that they got knowledge itself in the public school system. So that's the first thing. Getting into is defining the terms. A lot of people confuse political education with civics. So they hear political and education, they think, oh, that's you're talking about the three branches of government and electoral politics. And no, that's civics. That's what you learn in high school here in the public school system. And that type of education may teach you, it teaches you the acceptable ways. If you want to call it that, it teaches you, first of all, information that makes you patriotic to this nation. And it teaches you the acceptable ways to register complaint or grievance. So they'll teach you, as a social studies teacher for 30 something years, they'll tell you, I'm supposed to tell these kids, oh, you go vote, register to vote, and all these things. But the truth of the matter is, most of our forward motion as an African people in this country has come from radical scholarship, radical oratory, grassroots organizing. And those things put pressure on white or Black people in power to sign legislation or do whatever. But it never came from some governor or mayor or elected official. Those people were always pushed by grassroots people through organizing, right? So I want to say to people watching who may not know, political education is not knowing about elections, political parties, branches of government. Knowing those things without knowing sites of power, without knowing how they work and how to challenge them, is really not political education. When we talk about political education at Harlem Liberation School, we are clear on a few key things. It's not neutral. Education is not neutral. It's either, as Paulo Freire said in The Pedagogy of the Oppressed, is either teaching you to conform through a society or teaching you how to transform a society. It's one or the other. It's never neutral. You know, people say, oh, public education is for everybody. It's neutral. And we know it's not. It's also political education is not just about study. Much like Africana studies and Black studies takes this idea of theory and puts it into praxis. It's not enough to know this and that. One of the unique things of Africana studies or Black studies is that it teaches the framework stuff, but it also is a built-in mandate that we're supposed to connect with our community members. We're supposed to strategize and go out here and protest and at the same time build independent institutions and solve our problems. So political education, like Africana studies, is multidisciplinary. So a lot of people will come in and think, oh, we're going to learn history. I'm like, yeah, you're going to learn some history, but you're going to also learn political science, economics, media studies, psychology, the arts, right? It's because political education is seeking to help people understand the complexity, the different layers of oppression, how it works, who's responsible, some of the strategies we've historically used to address it, and things of that nature. And also, political education is not like, oh, I got this degree from college, I'm good type of deal. It's continuous. It stops when we die. Because the understanding is that we're lifelong learners, and that no matter how young or old we are, no matter how much we've done or haven't done, there's still more to learn and there's still more to do. I guess one of the questions that comes up to me a lot is, why does political education matter? And so it's interesting. I pulled out a few people who are prominent in our history that have addressed that. Thomas Sankara said famously that a soldier that does not have political training and education is a potential criminal. And what he's saying in that statement is that political education not only teaches you knowledge itself and how to fight and resist, it's supposed to teach ethics and character, right? So there's a way we treat our family, there's a way we engage in the community, there's a way we run organizations, and we have cooperative economics and things of that nature. Sister Soldier reminded us that if you don't know who you are, your history, you're not going to make good decisions about your present or your future. So she's telling us that political education is functional. It allows you to have agency and operate in the world in your own best interest. Amos Wilson taught us that education is about power, not fitting into someone else's system. I also want to give an elder from the Young Lords, sister I deeply respect, Denise Oliver Velez. She said that political education is the backbone of all effective organizing. So that's one of the reasons it's important. And then there's also the question of, okay, so when you go to medical school, it may help you to become a doctor. Go to law school, it helps you to interpret the law and to maybe do litigation. What does political education enable you to do? And I would argue that it strengthens our discipline, character, and responsibility to our people. It helps us understand who we are and where we come from and have an affinity for who we are and where we come from. So there's people who know who they are and where they come from, but they're disgraced that they come from Nigeria or Sierra Leone or Ghana, right? They feel embarrassed because their idea of Africa is that it's backwards and savage. So it's not just to know who we are and where we come from, but have an affinity and a love for that we're African and who are African people. It also improves our ability to make wise decisions in our self-interest, decisions for ourselves, for our families and communities to define ourselves. And it gives us tools to be able to read and evaluate geopolitics in the world. Right now, there's a big war against Iran. So Black political education can't just be concerned with what's going on in the continent of Africa, what's going on in the confines of the United States. We need to have a position. What's our position on what's going on in Iran, and how does that affect our people, right? And do we need to be paying attention to Burkina Faso and Sahel region? Do we need to be thinking about repatriation, right? All of these are questions that a solid Political education for our people is supposed to address and enable us to do so that we can start moving like chess players strategically and not checkers players in the moment and very emotionally, right? And I'm not alone in this idea that political education is important. The Black Panther Party made political education mandatory for its members. The Young Lords Party made political education mandatory for its members. The Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee trained members to think critically. And in that time, they may not have called it liberation schools, but they may have called them freedom schools, right? And Republic of New Africa, and I can go on and on. They all understood that without shared understanding, you can't have collective action. You can't even have a collective identity, right? So I wanted to make that point. And then I really want to spend a little time with a framework I've been talking about for many years. People on your show, this is new coming from me. If I was on a broadcast back that people on the East Coast, they'd be saying, "Oh, RJ, here you go again with this analogy." But for you all, hopefully it's a little more refreshing. And that is drawing from the Wizard of Oz framework. A lot of us saw the Wizard of Oz because for about 40 years, they played it during Christmas time every year. So that was one of the few movies that people saw every year. And of course, because you're with your family, it's a movie that a lot of people remember and associate with a good time, you know, the holidays and whatnot. And so when we were kids, it was kind of like, oh, that's cool, the Munchkins, and it was a lot of color. It was very fantastical. And we may have not been able to grasp the really deep, rich symbolism of that movie and some of the messaging in the movie. Now, Frank Baum, who wrote the original book upon which that movie came from, he was making an economic critique of the United States. That's why Oz is short for ounce, and there's a yellow brick road or gold, and that's where there was Emerald City and Ruby Red Slippers, right? But when I'm looking at it as an undergrad one day, I'm like, yo, that's crazy. I'm looking at the symbolism. And what I found was there's four major characters. And those four major characters, the white man who wrote this didn't intend this interpretation. This is my interpretation. Those four characters are actual archetypes of our community, meaning those four characters represent four types of people that white supremacy wants to create in our community so we'll be easy to subjugate. So Dorothy, what was her problem, good brother? Who remembers her problem? Well, every one of them had a problem. What was her problem?
Wanted to get
And she couldn't get home. She had the
home.
right idea, though. She was better than many of us. She wanted to get home, but she didn't know how. So in our lingo, that means she was what?
In our lingo,
If somebody wants to get somewhere, don't know where they are, don't know how to get back, what they are what? One word.
lost.
Boom. Malcolm talked about us being lost, right? Honorable Elijah Muhammad talked about us being a lost people. So yes, she represents an archetype, a type of black person that this society wants to create so that we're easy to mislead and subjugate and we'll never fight back and we'll just take it. Now, all of these characters have a deficiency, so they think, right? And that's important. They all thought they were lacking something important. So Dorothy figures, oh man, I can't get home. I don't have a way to connect. And then she runs, and then they tell her, oh, Dorothy, don't worry. Follow the yellow brick road. Because if you get to Emerald City, there's a wonderful wizard, and he can give you everything you want. That's interesting. We're going to come back to him in a minute because he's somebody too. The problem was she runs into another guy, Scarecrow. What was his problem? What didn't he have?
He was it courage? Man, I ain't seen that movie so long. So he was lacking courage, right? Or what?
Didn't have a
No,
brain.
that was the lion. Oh
Right.
yeah, he
Didn't
couldn't
have a
think.
heart. Right.
The
So,
scarecrow.
Scarecrow didn't have a brain. Now we know that that means if you don't have a brain, that means you are what? unintelligent. That's symbolic, right? So she's like, oh my God, you don't have a brain. Listen, if we follow this yellow brick road, I'm told we'll find a wizard and he'll solve our problem. So they go off, they dancing, they run into another guy. He's the Tin Man. The Tin Man also lacked something, so he thought that was very important, and he lacked a heart, right? And when we were kids, we weren't thinking all about the deep symbolism, but when we say someone is heartless, we're saying that they thugged out, gangbanging, take your life, don't care. They have no heart, lacking sensitivity, right? Okay. So they said, don't worry, Tin Man, we're gonna get you a heart. We're gonna find this wonderful wizard. He's gonna solve all our problems. Boom. So now they're on this road to the wizard, and they run into our last misfit, so to speak. And that's the cowardly lion. Well, we know his problem from the jump. It's in his name. He's a punk, right? So the cowardly lion, he's this big growl. He's supposed to be the king of the jungle. This dude's scared of a little mouse. He's running like a little chump. And he looks terrible. It's sad to see him. Natural leader of the jungle refusing to take his place on the throne. Right? Now, they're off to see the wizard. They're uniting. The people who feel that they're the lowest, they're despised, they don't have what they need, they're coming together. They're feeling good. Like anybody feels good. Oh, I have hope. But what they didn't know was there was another character. And this was a witch. And she was a wicked witch, like most witches are in the fairy tales. And this wicked witch had a specific geographic location that's very deep. She was the wicked witch from the west,
First, yeah.
Eastern Hemisphere. Right? So she had the ability, she was able to hear and see what all of them were saying, even though she wasn't right there. How was she able to do that? She in the movie had a crystal ball. Well, we know symbolically that means surveillance. She had the ability to see and hear people in a remote location and not have to be there. Today, we call them cameras and satellites. In the fairy tales, they call them crystal balls. So she hears that this group of misfits who believe they have nothing, are nothing, can be nothing, have hope, and they're going to find their way to liberation. She says, we got to stop that. So she sends them through all types of hazardous things. She sends monkeys after them, all types of crazy stuff. But one of the key things she does is she sends them, and this is in the movie. You can actually see the original movie. And she says, essentially, I'm going to send them through poppy fields. And then she says, go to sleep, go to sleep. Why would she say go to sleep? Well, because poppy plants make opium, heroin, right? Sedative drugs. To put them to sleep, metaphorically meaning to make sure that they are not able to have agency to do the work that men and women got to do to be free, right? So that's interesting because in my father's day, when he was a young man, it wasn't, it was a pot. They sent him and many of our people in Vietnam and many of our brothers through the poppy fields and had them addicted to heroin. Yeah. So, and then in my time as a young man in the 80s, they used something called crack to put us to sleep. But just bear with me for a minute. I'm gonna wrap it up. So they finally wake up, they finally get to the wonderful wizard. Finally, this is what they've been waiting for. They're going to get their big gift. They're going to get the things they feel they're lacking. But while they're in this place, the wonderful wizard, he has this deep voice and this smoke and it's shaking and they're scared. If you look at them, they're scared. Like, oh my God. It's like they're talking to God, you know. And Toto, the dog, comes up and pulls this curtain back. And when Toto the dog pulls the curtain back, they see a stale, pale, and frail white male with a wheel and a microphone that's talking through a special mic, giving the effect of this booming voice. And he sees, oh my God, I've been seen. So now they come up to him, they're mad because this yellow brick road is symbolic of a journey of life. They spend all their life thinking they are nothing, have nothing, can be nothing. And that if they go here and see this person, they'll be free. Right? So they get to the wonderful wizard and realize the wizard is a fake. Sounds like somebody we know. He uses propaganda and gimmicks and military and all types of legislation and big sounding words and threats to make people cower to him. But if you go up to him face to face, he don't have nothing for you. Nothing for you. Right? So he's cowering, he's scared. And now each of them says, how am I supposed to get my brain? How am I supposed to get my heart? How am I supposed to get home? How am I, right? They're mad. So this is what he does. He says to the lion, he said, well, lion, you always had courage. I can't give you that. I don't have the power to give you that, number one. And you already had it. But where I come from, we give people like you this. And he gives the lion a medal, family. Like a military medal of valor. This is deep, because this is what they did to us. Give him a medal. So this is a symbol that's supposed to make him feel all of a sudden that he has something. And he gets happy, not realizing he already had the thing that he was taught he didn't have. Because in the whole movie, he's the one that's fighting, leading the fights. Right? The scarecrow. How am I going to get a brain? The wizard tells him, well, I'm no wizard. I'm a fake. I have no power. But where I come from, we give people like you this. And what did he give him? A diploma. This is crazy. With a ribbon on it. This is what we give you. And as soon as he gave him this diploma, all of a sudden the scarecrow is quoting Einstein and getting all smart, right? Okay. And then he gives the Tin Man a certificate of philanthropy, but Dorothy is left. Dorothy still, all her friends got what they needed. Supposedly, because they already had these things. But Dorothy's left. She still can't get home. So, right when the one thing the wizard can do, because he was a hot air balloonist, he's a liar, he's a fraud, hot air. That's what they're trying to tell you, right? He says, well, I can help you, Dorothy. You're the only one I can help. I could actually get in a hot air balloon and take you out of here. She and the dog get on the balloon with him. Her dog jumps out the little basket. She jumps out to get her dog. The so-called wizard sails off, and now she still doesn't have a way home. Fortunately for Dorothy, just like us, there's good witches out here. There's people that sacrificed and studied and fought to protect us and to build institutions for us and to teach us and display great bravery in doing so. So Glinda, the good witch, who happens to be from a geographic location too, from the north. Right? She comes and says, oh, baby girl, don't cry. All you gotta do is click your heels 3 times and say, there's no place like home. There's no place like home. There's no place like home. Now, what does political education have to do with this? Political education is supposed to, as the white man wants to make us Dorothy, who's lost out of her mind, doing, dressing, engaging in all types of deviant stuff like the white man, lost. Don't know she have mad. If you call her African, she want to fight. Political education gets Dorothy, fixes Dorothy right. So no, baby girl, we started this thing called civilization. You've been lied to. Political education is supposed to take the brother who's no heart out here gangbanging, wearing colors, and certainly not moving against racist police with any violence, just themselves. They say, no, brother, we don't do that. We love on each other. We don't kill each other, brother. Who taught you that? We get them right. We give them heart, sensitivity, and empathy for their people, compassion for their people, right? Political education then goes to the cowardly punk brothers and sisters out here, got more muscles than you can count, and ain't lifting a finger to help sisters getting body slammed by police on social media. They taking, recording it and taking pictures of it, doing nothing to stand up, not taking their rightful place on the throne. Political education helps them see who they are and whose they are. And it tells them you have a mandate. You are responsible to do something for your community, not sit around and gossip and do all this other foolishness, right? And then lastly, political education is supposed to reach those little boys and girls who've been miseducated in the public and private schools, not just public schools, parochial schools too, about who they are and where they come from. Political education gives them that missing link, the information that they weren't taught in school, that gives them a sense of hope and somebody-ness, and gives them a sense that what their people have done in the past, they can do today. And that we're not going to sit around getting our drawers in a bunch, cowering because of what this president did or what that ain't do, that one ain't doing. We're going to focus on what we need to do, as our people have always done, have always resisted in every historical era. So for me, that really is the best way to sum up what our mission is as Harlem Liberation School and political education in general. It's to make sure there are no Dorothys, cowardly lions, heartless, ruthless tin men, and people out here feeling that they're ignorant and they can't do this. They have no capacity, no competence. It's to completely change those people, prevent those characters from developing. And if they are there already, it's to take them out of that mold and help them to discover they taught you don't have that, but you do have it, but it's lying dormant. You do have intelligence. If you can find out how much money we need to get the weed and you make that happen, that took some form of intelligence and leadership capabilities, just going in a very silly direction, right? Or we're gonna wear it to the party. Y'all working that out. That took leadership and communication, but it's not going to the most revolutionary cause, but it's the same thing. Running big drug operations takes great leadership and bravery and strategy, but it's going to not such a good direction. So that's really the purpose of political education, is to make sure that those characters never again exist in our community. And it is also to remind them, because the whole point of the movie was, there's no place like home. You know, one of the things I like telling young people, girls and guys, you are the prize, not the car, not the shoes, not the outfit, not the college, not the church, not the boyfriend or girlfriend. You are the prize. You put your time into making yourself the best self you can be in every respect. And anything that's for you out here, you will attract. You'll be aligned with it, you'll attract it. But don't chase none of this. That's not what this life is about. It's about being our highest selves and doing the work that needs to be done in our communities. You know? So that to me, that really is what it's about. Reconnecting us to our history, our culture, our reality, developing critical thinking, problem-solving skills, taking people who feel that they're dumb and they can't do nothing and saying, nah, brother, sister, nah, that's incorrect. You're very smart. You're just lying dormant, or you're using it in maybe self-defeating ways, right? We could take, look at a Malcolm. Look at a brother Malcolm. He's in the street. He's doing all types of craziness in the street. And then when he gets reconnected with his knowledge of self, because you know he had knowledge of self as a kid, when he gets reconnected with that, what's he do? He uses all them street skills and puts that right into the movement. He used that gift, the gab, and uses that to get to fish, as he called it, and get recruits for the Nation of Islam. You know, so that's to me the importance of political education. And I would probably end with just saying that we're in a unique time. When I was young, Ronald Reagan was the president. I believe when I first entered college, Ronald Reagan was the president. I remember he had closed a lot of our community centers closed, and libraries were closing early, and he was doing a lot of things. They call it austerity measures, you know. We got to tighten our belts. And of course, our communities were the ones that had to tighten our belts, right? So we lost a lot of important programs and things like that. And crack and AIDS, a lot went on during Reagan's time. And I don't want to say this, but we fought back. We had the second Black Arts Movement that's not giving us proper respect. Called hip hop in the 80s. Hip hop in the 80s was straight up Black nationalist and Pan-African. It was Brand Nubian. It was Poor Righteous Teachers. It was X-Clan, which is, you know, coming from the son of Sonny Carson, right? So it was kicking some of the same things you might have heard from a Kwame Ture, a Brother Malcolm, a Chokwe Lumumba, but doing it in a poetic musical form where young people were getting hip to it. KRS-One. This is the stuff I was coming up to. So although by that time the Black Power movement was kind of had waned out for the most part, this hip hop that was political was our Black Arts movement, right? But today, so we, in other words, my point is we were fighting Reagan when they were trying to tear down the Audubon, where Brother Malcolm had his meetings and he was killed. Columbia University was trying to tear it down and take it over, and we were coming to those things and disrupting those things in the street, protesting that. We're going to college campuses and protesting for Black Studies departments, which were there because of our parents' generation, but by the 80s they were all dilapidated. So now we're finishing the work of our parents, and that's because hip hop was there to guide us. That's where you hear Malcolm is in all up in Public Enemy's records, Farrakhan at that time, Brother Khaled is all up in these records. So although some people weren't conscious, the hip hop music reached a lot of them. Today, though, today we got a president that's straight up fascist. If anybody looks up fascism and the different elements of fascism, that is exactly where he's heading. Absolutely suppressing the media, using the military inappropriately and to intimidate citizens, arresting it. I saw in the news they had some high school student. Boy came from Venezuela, has his papers. They kidnapped this boy from his home, took him to Pennsylvania, somewhere to Pennsylvania, put him in a detention camp, and he's been in there for 10 months. High school student, and just returned home. All that is fascist type of behavior. Trying to expand the power of the government so that he can be a king, so to speak. We didn't have that in the 80s. It was bad in the 80s, but it wasn't quite where it is now. And on top of it, back then we had a resistance movement. You wasn't just dealing with Black people any old way in the 80s. There was repercussions. When they shot Eleanor Bumpus, we were there in Brooklyn. When they killed Michael Griffin, we were there in Brooklyn. We were there. There was a response. Now, not the same. So at this time, we really need political education, because if it was doing what it's supposed to do, you would have, in my as I see it, more organizations that were very clear on what needs to be done and doing what needs to be done. Some would be above ground, some, by the nature of things, would be underground and wouldn't be on social media for those reasons, right? They're doing underground work. But you wouldn't see Black people cowering and scared and have anxiety over Trump, because they would know we got backup. We got people in our community that's fighting for us. When I look at the history and I see the Black Panther, the Black Power movement, Black Arts movement, these people are 14, 15, 17, 18 years old. These are young people running those movements, right? Do you see that today? No. Not like that. So to me, the enemy will be the enemy. I don't care what the enemy does. The question is, what are we doing? Why aren't we rising up to the occasion the way we historically have? There's a lot of factors for that. That's probably a whole nother broadcast. But one of the reasons that I believe the political education, that people are not getting the information they need from the people who love them, who know what they're talking about, who fight on their behalf, to inspire people, to fortify people to get involved. Right now, what we have is a lot of backbiting, unfortunately. I'm talking about in my age group, in the 50 somethings. And down are doing a lot of what do we call ourselves? Are we American descendants of slaves? Are we foundational Black Americans? The Pan-Africans are arguing amongst themselves. The nationalists are arguing amongst themselves. And I'm saying, listen, listen, listen. We got an enemy who don't give a damn what you call yourself, what continent you connect yourself to, what colors you wear, what religion you subscribe to. They're trying to get all of us and subjugate all of us. And so the people who make that call to war, that call to action, that let's get ready, let's get our grind up, let's do the things we need to do, are the educators. So whether they're poets or classroom teachers, or community organizers. I'm saying now is the time for those people to come to the forefront, because we have a lot of people who are lost, like Dorothy, clearly lost. You know, because if you know any bit of our history, you know, every time somebody came to oppose or oppress us, we always fought back. We had people that was fighting enslavement and couldn't read and write their name, couldn't count, didn't know what day they were born, but they built schools though. They started banks though. They started their own faith centers. So what I'm saying is, if we can do all that with so little, what's missing? If we have all these things, what's missing? And to me, what's missing is that heart, that spirit of, I don't care what he doing. I don't give a damn what he doing. We're going to fight, and not just fight them. We're going to build independent institutions, our schools, our community centers, our supermarkets, our laundromats, our farms. The nationalist Pan-Africanist program is not being as well articulated and executed as it was in my parents' generation. I dare say, Dr. Amin-Ra and people like yourself, as you were doing it, it's fallen. It's not where it should be. Now it's just a lot of pontificating, too much pontificating, not enough doing, rolling up your sleeves and doing the work that has to be done. And I hope to play a small part, our organization and all political education organizations, to help people understand what we've done historically, and to practice Sankofa in a real way, to go back, but not to keep our heads in the sands of Africa. Because when we say go back and fetch, that means when you throw that ball, Fido don't go there with the ball and stay there. Fido takes the ball and what? Brings it back. So I'm hoping that we'll play a part in this era of Black resistance and nationalism and Pan-Africanism to ask and answer the critical questions that a good political education system does. What problems are our communities facing? Who's causing them? What are our self-defeating behaviors or beliefs we need to change? What ideas and strategies can help us move forward? What lessons can we learn from past movements? What new world are we trying to create? Like, when all of this is said and done, because I'm not trying to fight the white man my whole life, I want to be able to say, this is the type of world I want to create. And what does that look like? And what do we have to do to get it there? And so for me, that's why I'm in the movement of political education. And I'm basically done, my brothers. Thank you for your patience. I'm basically done.
But listen, brother, I think that using the Wizard of Oz is a great teaching tool because that's tapping into prior knowledge. You know, for people to kind of understand where you're coming from, that's excellent. And I think that's a beautiful tool to use. You know, anybody that's learning has to connect to something that they know about to increase their learning. So that I think that was beautiful. So I'm gonna go straight to the panel for questions and comments. So I'm gonna start with Brother Ernest. Brother Ernest.
Well, that story, that was pretty. I never looked at the Wizard of Oz in that light because I didn't like it to begin with. And I've never seen it all the way through. You know, even when I was young, took my kids, I didn't have, really analyze it like you did there. That was excellent. But the fact that a lot of people, they're doing a lot of, because I was kind of thinking too, we're not getting out there and fighting like we used to, but we are, but it's not being public televised like King stuff. You know, that stuff was on TV and it captured our imagination. But fights like that was going on all over the United States and just about every community. And just like the NAACP in Long Beach now, they got the 100 Black Men's in Long Beach. They got the National Council of Negro Women. They got the local NAACP branch. And there's about three or four more organizations. They're organized in No Kings marches now. It's kind of gearing up. you know, because they trying to, you know, set this where it's close to the election, because we've done a lot of voter. We've been doing voter stuff almost every weekend, NAACP, you know, rousing up voters and letting them know what's going on. And our thing now is to try to hold their attention to that June election, you know, because voters, you know yourself, they riled up here and then they fade down the road unless you keep them energized. So that's kind of what's going on now with people in my age group. But like, I'm 88, see, so I'm
Wow.
up there. So
You're 88?
I don't know what's happening
Wow.
with a lot of younger people. I got a granddaughter who's they're forming a Cal State Long Beach NAACP youth branch, you know, and she's a president of that, but that's just now gearing up. And then Long Beach City College started one also. And so they're getting involved with the civil rights and all that now. So they're gearing up. I think come June, we're gonna be ready. It's not gonna
That's
be an
good.
easy thing like this guy think it is gonna be, you know.
That's right. Yeah.
So we just fighting the fight, doing, you know, I do what little bit I can, because I can remember back like what you saying. I had a lot of friends. Earl Satcher was in the militant Black Panthers back in the 60s, you know. In fact, Earl in the late 50s, you know, he was one of the, you know, kind of organized with the Oakland branch, and because they had kind of little, you know, groups down here, and they was all Sonny Pitts and some of them, and then they went off in the other little splinter groups. But they've been kind of the youth, but I don't know how the youth are doing here now, because I'm not in touch with them. Last time I've been in touch with any of the youth was in the 80s when I coached some track teams and at the high school. So I'm really not tuned to the neighborhood, so to speak, you know. Only the older generation. So they're geared up. They're ready to go. So, because we see what's happening, you know, like you say, you get this clown in there, and I don't know, and then he became Israel's lapdog with this war over here, you know. So I mean, it's ridiculous. And then the Supreme Court screwed everything up, you know, by, you know, because he should be in jail instead of president. And Netanyahu should be in there too. And he wants this war to keep going to keep his ass out of jail. Because they say soon as he geared down from this, he going to jail, you know, according to the Israel people and a lot of people in the know. So he's not getting around that. And Trump's trying to get him a pardon, so to speak, you know, but they said, no, that's not happening. So,
Yeah,
anyway,
Ernest,
that's my little two cents.
I got something for you, Ernest. United States of Criminals running America.
Huh?
United States of Criminals running America.
Oh, that's right. You're right about that. This is ridiculous. And even as running a Trump supporter, all I say is, man, I have no respect for a man that doesn't have integrity, that lies every other time he opens his fucking mouth. Excuse me. But I
That's
do
right.
not have any respect for
Ernest.
a person like that. I'm
Ernest, I
like
better
Dr.
hurry you.
Ra. I gotta kind of cool down, because this is, you know, it's
Don't
ridiculous.
get too riled up there, Ernest. I never heard you say that, but I'm not gonna edit it out, though.
Ain't
All right,
take
well,
it
thanks, Ernest. Brother Ahi. Brother
well,
Ahi.
I don't know how to follow that, Ernest, because you hit the nail right in the top of the head. But I enjoyed the brother's analysis of everything that the characters needed. They had it already.
and took the wizard to kind of like say a few things to for them to utilize it to what they already had to liberate themselves. I guess it's sort of like that heathen that's in the office. If the young people had no idea what their status is and their value, he's letting them know exactly what their status is, and they feel have much higher esteem and views of who and what they are, and they are taking some steps to liberate themselves. Some of the organizations are they able to wake up and look around themselves and see the world for really what it is and their predicament and you know, of course, once you can see that, then you can take steps to liberate yourself. We definitely in a fantasy world right now, 'cause you couldn't write this stuff. It's like we as people of African descent, we believe more in the system than they do. And it's always been like that. Well, we've always had to walk a narrow line and play the game according to what the system is, but the game is not level. The game is rigged. And you can see that with what this heathen is, who has no agenda, who wakes up and on the fly says things like, "Well, I think I'll drop a bomb today." No agenda, no reason, ins and outs of why you're doing it. But the fate of the world is in, seems to be in this guy's hand. And 80 million people behind him who are used to privilege and look at themselves as being supreme, that's the only thing that they care about because they have no talking points. They're full of hypocrisy and, man, we could go on about this forever, but I see the man hiding behind the sheet, the paper tiger, like the Chinese used to call him. You think you got all this power, and you're seeing that their tentacles. Hey, you know, they're involved with all the wars around the world. Iran dropping all these bombs around their people who they have an agenda to share with, where they have a military basis and stuff like that, and in the process exposing what's happening, and who's paying who and what's happening in Sudan right now. The Sudanese army is winning all these battles now because the UAE is more concerned about or have no time to focus on the battle of their Arab Muslims killing the Sudanese down there because they're being shot at. And America really don't have are putting more defense into the Israeli than they are to the people who actually have their military bases and radar and everything else on their land. This is going to be real interesting to see how this is going to come out because if they don't go all the way through and get this regime out in Iran. Iran is going to be more conservative and a bigger problem than what they were because there was no agenda. I mean, there was no the tentative problem as far as them attacking America. But now there's going to be a problem. And the people around them who were their allies, who were against the war, but who were sleeping in with the Americans, are getting bombed, and the tension is going to be over there. And this is America's, this is their swan song. They're getting ready to get out. And he getting ready to find out what's really happening when he dropped those two troops in there. And to his demise, they're going to be slaughtered. So this is there's no telling. And you know, they want to drop the bomb, the Israelis, with all the problems that they, all the problems that they caused over there, know that if Iran gets the best of them and it, America is pushed out of there, then they, you got to pay the piper. You, the chicken's gonna come home to roost. So it's a good chance that they say we have nothing to lose. They might drop the big one. So this devil is really done it now. On the one hand, we know without America leading the world, we'd probably be in a better place because this place has been a perpetual war anyway. You know, everything that they spread, their whole agenda, and everything they say about the rest of the world, these are the real monsters. I was listening to someone on NPR today talk about lynchings. It was so awful. I had to just turn the station. Oh my God. But yeah, as far as us having what we need to liberate ourselves, it's there. I don't know what the push is going to be on our young people. Got a whole lot of prayer and thoughts for them. I know it's there. I see them working, but then I see them confused too, because it's a lot of them. It's all about what they think it is and not what the facts are. So, yeah, it's the root wizard of Oz. Boy, that's a real man. We can go in so many directions with that, but I'm gonna let it go. I said what I had to do. My mind is racing and going in all different directions. We're in a really tight situation now, and I think that they're leaning toward this is going to be a long war. Or maybe Trump can just get up and say tomorrow and say, "Well, it's over. We're going to walk away. We're just going to leave this situation." It's a no-win situation. It's a no-win situation. So, brother, you're here at the right time. Thank you for coming, and you really got my mind going, and I'll be thinking about this tomorrow when I get up. So,
All right, thanks, Brother Ahi.
yeah.
Dr. Sharita, you joined us late. You want to because I wanted to ask you if you had a question for the brother or a topic, but I guess you're just listening. I'm gonna go to Professor Ra. Professor Ra.
Bunny County again, Brother RJ. Is that's right, RJ?
Yes, sir.
Okay, brother, first of all, thanks for your deep thinking and critical analysis of our situation. And appreciate what you said, if I understand correctly. I talked politics in the Black community for a long time, Haynes Walton, Ron Walters, and when they started the Black Caucus and Congressional Black Caucus and things like that. The struggles, I just have a couple questions before I get into it. What's the difference between the movie The Wiz and The Wizard of Oz? Why you don't use The Wiz versus The Wizard of Oz?
Yes.
The Wiz is with Black people. The Wiz is with, Diana Ross, Michael Jackson, Nipsey Russell, and all and Richard Pryor and all of them. And it's the same story. Rescue, but why you chose the white Wizard of Oz versus the Black Wiz? Is there a difference?
Well, I chose The Wiz because it's the original story. The Wiz is an adaptation of the original story. And believe it or not, for that reason I mentioned earlier, because The Wiz was shown for about 50 years every Christmas season, it's one of those movies that a lot of Black people saw when they went over to their grandma or auntie's house for these holiday get-togethers. So it's something that a lot of us saw for that reason, but because it's the original, and I think it's more rich in symbolism. Now, I do sometimes go to The Wiz, but I think the points that I'm trying to make about the importance of political education, I think that the original story lends itself better to that. I don't So in other words, I don't racialize that story. Although one could say, well, The Wiz is the black adaptation, but I think as a story, The Wiz is better, if I can
Okay,
be honest.
that's good. That's good.
I
All right.
do.
Tell me a little bit more about your Harlem Liberation School. Is this where people come to learn politics, or is it what type of school is it?
Yes, sir. So it originally, when we started in 2016, we were in a brick and mortar space. We met in it was called Raw Space. It was an art gallery. And we'd have 30, 40, 50 black people come out maybe twice a month on Mondays, the second and last Monday of every month. And we'd have political education classes and we would have guest speakers. So we had Professor Smalls came through. I don't know if you know Jabari Osadzie. He's kind of a middle-aged, he came through Africana Studies and Research Center at Cornell too, through Dr. Turner. He's kind of a, some would say, a leading authority on Kemet science and Kemetic history. And we had a lot of people come through there to do presentations. And we also taught a kind of an ongoing political education class. But it's not a school in the sense of teachers and promotions and graduations. It's a center. After the epidemic and a number of other things, the people that allowed us to use the space, their rent got quadrupled, and then the epidemic. So we've been out of the brick and mortar. We're trying to get back in the brick and mortar, but we didn't stop. We continued the work through our YouTube channel, the work of so we've had a bunch of some really powerful organizers and educators and activists and artists,
So
Daruba Ben.
what's your curriculum? I mean, as far as educating people, we have a theory through this organization, and Dr. Corrine, he will always argue that we have a struggle. A cultural struggle from within and a political struggle without out. Because see, there's so many organizations now that have different interests and they're fighting for different things. Omari and Bedelli, them and the Republic of Africa, they're not as prominent as they were in the late 70s and things of this nature, 80s and stuff, and Chokwe Lumumba was the attorney and all of that. But at the same time, the struggle continued. Queen Mother Moore and her reparations, and because New York is really the center of a lot of organizational activity. It always has been on the East Coast, one of the major, them in Chicago, of course, that really pushed a sense of consciousness. And I just want to know when you're doing political education, where are you teaching? You saying this? It's like a center, so you bring speakers in to educate people, or you have activities to educate people. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
What's the struggle? And see, we you have the Institute of Black World, you have the NAN, with Sharpton, you have us organization with Maulana. I mean, there's so many different organizations fighting on different ways, and you don't think that's progress. The Malcolm program
I don't understand the question,
what
Baba.
I'm
Could you
saying is that you're politically educating people. Do you educate them about organizations that you find doing good things? I mean, what happened in Ferguson, the Million Man March? I mean, there's a lot of activities from the 90s, the 80s and 90s, that spread out. I mean, you had African Powell in New York, you had Charles Rangel, you had a number of you got the squad today in Congress, and you have Sister Crockett. You know, they're not from New York, but they're hollering and they're making noise.
Yes, sir. Well, appreciating what you said, if I understand it correctly, if you were to go to our channel on YouTube, over 600 videos, you would see that we teach people things like, what is fascism? When we say leftist ideology, what is that? We talk about Republic of New Africa. We talk about Queen Mother Moore, Honorable Marcus Garvey. We have mini docs on a good brother out of Harlem, Alambre Brath, Thomas Sankara. We have all types of mini docs. We look at the basic aims and objectives and strategies of the civil rights movement, of the Black Power movement, of the Black Arts movement. So really, it's not so much our position or purpose to be hypercritical. We don't exist to be critical of other organizations. We exist to teach people how to critically think, to understand our history, different elements of Black resistance, and so on and so forth. But naturally, in teaching that history and looking at where we're trying to go, where we've been, where we are today, it's only natural that we're going to wind up being critical of what we may see as a lack of certain activity, or what we may see as things that are self-defeating. But make no mistake, one of the reasons that Harlem Liberation School stands out here on the East Coast, and I want to say throughout the nation, is that we don't participate in backbiting. We actually welcome anybody into the space, as long as they're not a traitor. And so we're if you ask around, we're definitely not involved in anything disingenuous. We're all for Black solidarity, but critical. We're critical. Just because someone's Black and they say they're fighting for Black people, we know that doesn't always mean that that's right and exact. So we reserve the right to be critically supportive. But we work with all types of groups.
Okay.
You know, so I don't want to give the impression, because I'm passionate. I'm passionate about this. Because I know where I'm from, where I still live in the neighborhood of my birth, I'm seeing great gentrification, landmarks erased. People don't know what happened in this area or in this block or who these people are. So I'm passionate about that. And that definitely is going to come off. But I don't want that to be mistaken for the fact that I'm in some way beating up on Black people. If anything, I'm trying to inspire Black people through education to show them that we fought back in every era, and this era is no different. And things will change, you know. Baba Daruba bin Wahad says something I love. He says, history doesn't repeat itself, but it rhymes. And I was like, that's deep, because he's letting you know, like, you're going to see elements. It won't never be exactly the same, but there'll be elements. And so that's what we see. And I just think that social media, so to some degree, the breakdown of families, a lot of institutions that formerly were passing down certain information are no longer as viable, no longer as present. And so I'm passionate as an educator, particularly about, I can see the different eras, the different young people, the different, what they were doing. And I'm concerned. But I don't want anyone to mistake my passion to mean that I've given up, or it's the exact opposite. I get up 3, 4 in the morning every day. I'm highly energized to do this work. Everybody that knows me will tell you that. So I have not given up on us, but I have the right to be critical, and I'm going to use that right to be critical, because I was taught by Jegners that told me that Dr. John Henry Clark told me himself. I asked him at this student conference, I was an undergrad, and I was so nervous that Dr. Clark, I study a lot. I want to, serve our people in some way. I study our history a lot and stuff like that. What's your advice? And he said, at this point, he was pretty much blind. And he said to me, he said, keep studying that history, master that history, and defend it like your life depends on it, because it does. So when he's telling me defend it, I'm taking that to mean defend it, defend our people, that we have to, that working with people doesn't mean that we give up our right to be critical.
I understand that.
Yeah. So I don't want you thinking, Bob, that I'm just beating up on the people when I gave up.
No,
It's the exact
because
opposite.
I know you're familiar with COINTELPRO and the billions of dollars that they spend to keep us disunified and
Yes, sir.
send us in different ways, and how they prop up preachers and the role of you weaponized religion against us and all that. I know, I can tell by the way you talk, you're familiar with that. But you was talking about hip hop. What? I mean, I don't see hip hop as separate from what Gil Scott was doing, what The Last Poets was doing, what Sweet Honey
Exactly right.
Rock was doing. I mean, it's a message in the music. As a matter of fact, it was Gil Scott that coined the term. If your music don't have a message in it, it should be an instrumental. And I'm just saying, we've had throughout our history people with messages in their music. Maybe Nina Simone, going back. These young people, they act like they just discovered messages. And then they're going to call it hip hop to separate it from the continued struggle. It's all a part of that continued struggle. They're just an evolution of the continued struggle. Or you see him different. Do you see
No,
him?
sir, I agree with you. I think we're saying the same thing. I actually said that in my generation, hip hop was like the black arts movement of my generation. And I said that people like KRS-One, I said, if you remember, I said, were saying the same messages as Kwame Ture and Chokwe Lumumba. I don't know if you remember that. I was recalling that they were continuing that message. But I was saying, I came up with consciousness in my household. But for all those black teens who didn't, hip hop was the medium that got them to thinking about history and culture and politics. So I was actually, we're saying the same thing. Absolutely, I agree with you.
But when hit, but then it switched over to gangster rap.
Yeah, that's a whole nother broadcast there. That's the COINTELPRO. Just like the Black Power movement, Black Arts movement, the underlying ideologies continued. Well, the same with COINTELPRO. Same COINTELPRO continued too, and that's the one form of it. That whole gangster rap piece, absolutely. And now it's called trap. They got something called trap music. You can't understand half what they're saying. It's this kind of melodic beat. There's a lot of drug talking about drugs and a lot of other stuff. That's the new wave. So it's the new wave. They continue and we continue. Like you said, the struggle continues. I guess that's just the ebb and flow of revolution or change, I guess.
All right, I'm good. Thanks again, brother.
Thank you, sir. Thank you. Still on?
Right, Professor Ra, thank you. Let me see if Dr. Sharita going to unmute. Dr. Sharita, are you going to unmute? I guess not. Just listening. Okay.
Hey, peace and love, family. Sorry, I'm actually packing to fly out in the morning, so I'm just kind of halfway listening, and I came in late. I'm trying to catch what you're talking about.
I noticed that, but the topic is the importance of political education. Do you have a question for the brother, or you have a comment about that?
Maybe I'm not, my brain is dead right now. I'm telling you, it's been a day. It's been a day. It's been heavy. The city of Compton. Yeah, so I think it is important. this as long as it is centered towards us, towards our well-being. So I'm not really sure what you meant on like what political education as far as in college and university. You mean like at just at home, just like the way I grew up in the Pan-African movement, wellness movement, and learned a lot that way. Like what do you mean as far as political education? I guess I don't want you to start again, but I just wanted to see what angle.
Yes. So when I'm talking about political education, I'm talking about the education that prepares and equips our people to, in the words of Brother Malcolm, wake up, clean up, and stand up. And
Okay.
I forgot that, and I forgot that in the beginning. But our greeting at Harlem Liberation School is the acronym of that: wake up, clean up, stand up. Wukusu. We say Wukusu, brother. That's our way of reminding ourselves that we should at all times be, is, does this help us wake up, develop our consciousness, our sense of identity, who we are, where we come from? Does it help us clean up, become self-corrective, and address our self-defeating behavior? Now, getting away from white supremacy for a minute and saying, what things are we doing that get in our way? And then to stand up, to exert leadership and agency. So when I say political education, it does those three things.
Excellent.
Okay, thank
Excellent.
you for the clarification. Yes, I do see it as being important.
And I was making the point that especially now, because when dictators come into play, into power, and they're flashing military and bombing people up, and they don't seem to be strategic, and they're reckless with their mouth, and they're firing people who don't agree with them, and hiring people who are incompetent but loyal to them. Black people who are vulnerable get scared. They get demoralized. And they get confused and they start to lose faith. So it's precisely at those historical moments when the political education has to step up and be assertive
So
and
you can
say
see
we.
the history is repeating itself. That's what would happen when you get that political education. You see that the history is constantly repeating itself. This white man is no different. Every time he does the same thing, just in a different face. I don't see anything. Only thing I see that as far as Trump, which I'm so sick of talking about him, but the only thing I see as far as him is that he is showing you what they've been doing all along. He showed you all the players in the beginning. Who's going to be all these corporate people? He showed you the players. He showed you he all he's doing is pulling his pants down and showing America with their pants down. This is exactly what they've been doing all this time. Everything that they've been doing has been leading up to this. And every era, it just keeps repeating itself. And we keep falling for the okey-doke because of not having a political education. You see, we keep falling into that. My brother said, God may rest in peace. He said when Trump became president the first time, and my brother's a typical black man, from Compton in Louisiana. And he said, well, we black. Only thing we just gonna adjust like we always do. And I saw that he has the attitude of a lot of people. Too many of us. You see, so I don't see any of this being new. It's nothing new under the sun. And I just feel like it's always been happening. If you've been in the movement, if you read the New World Order, if you've been you see that these things were coming and how they even were going to do it or how they've been doing it. And they even wrote, what's this thing that they this project
2025.
2025. I mean, I'm saying they laying everything out. It's not even the first time. They even have what do they call these stones? Guidestones, Georgia Guidestones. You ever heard of those? Are you in Georgia?
No, I'm in Harlem, New York.
Oh, you're in New York. So Georgia, I lived in Georgia 20 years. Area called, I believe it's LAJ, but you can just look it up, Georgia Guidestones. they talk and the whole story behind it is because it's a long story, but on those stones they put down how they want the world to be by a particular time, the population, how much the population, how many people in the world, all these different things, the languages that were going to be spoken, which were I think about seven. I'm not sure how many it was, but definitely it'd be way less languages. You know what I'm saying? This is something that has always been since they've been on this planet. They came here as a cancer. You see, so this has always been their same. Cancer acts the same every time it goes into the body, just keeps eating away and breaking down. So what you're saying, what you're talking about is having a political education that I believe is the only thing that's going to stop history from constantly repeating itself. That's it. That's all.
Thank you, Dr. Sharita. Brother Ajay, we definitely need to pay attention to the things that you're saying, because that teaching tool that you presented lets me know that you're in the right frame of mind of what things that should be done for us. And I mean it, and then when I look at the political scene, and Neely Fuller said that that's politics is people activity. And I'm definitely close in the mind frame of Neely Fuller Jr., the elder who just passed earlier this year, or was that earlier last year? His time is just running by us. But definitely the things that you're saying is very important and should be considered. And the work is being done. The effectiveness of it, I think, needs to be taken a look at. Adjustments definitely need to be made to make it better. But you're doing work. Definitely, we're doing work. Other organizations are doing work. Just alignment, more alignment, which is happening, has to take place too, these connections. So I really appreciate what you're saying and what you're doing. That you're saying it and you're doing it. Appreciate that. Now, I guess we're coming to a close, so you can kind of give us a close, and then we'll revisit again and again, hopefully. So you can close us on out.
Okay, so yeah, I would summarize it by, first of all, thank you for allowing me, sharing your platform with me. It's refreshing to get away from the East Coast for a minute and get over to the West Coast and build with my brothers and sisters on the West Coast, who has a lot of revolutionary history in the West Coast, a lot. So much respect due. I would just probably restate that political education has to be, is essential. It comes second or third only to eating and breathing. It should not be seen as something that's cute. We do it in February, or that's a nice novel thing. No, it has to be seen as something that is going on in our homes and our spiritual centers, our organizations. I think it should be flexible. It shouldn't be static and rigid. The political education classes that we're having now would probably be radically different from what SNCC was doing in Mississippi in 1950s, because of the nature of what's going on then and the nature of what's going on now. So it would take a slightly different angle. It should be flexible. And then I would say that also it has to be critical, and that we have to appreciate the need to be critical. And when I say critical, I don't mean criticizing. I don't mean, you saw his shoes, man, he's crazy. Not like that, but more like when somebody's coming before us with a plan or ideology or whatever they're doing, we have to be able to assess that and say, does that fit what we need right now? And also, lastly, I'm doing a workshop. I do a leadership workshop every month for this year. First one in January was how to prioritize tasks in our organizations. What's most important? What's least important? What should get most of our energy and our resources? What shouldn't? Then the second one was how to get input from our community so that we're not going off thinking we got to figure it out when nobody asked the community, you know, what their issues were. This one tomorrow is talking about the beauty and burden of ideology. So our political education has to teach people being nationalist is good. Pan-Africanist is good. You're socialist, Africana womanist, whatever. But keep in mind that when it becomes too rigid and dogmatic, when it becomes too inflexible and you're unable to appreciate other ways of being, then the thing that's there to liberate you can become a tool of oppression itself. Right, so that's what we're talking about tomorrow night, and that's very important because we have African independence movements. When African nations fought for independence and were freedom fighters, and then got into office, and all of a sudden, one constitution, we changed the constitution, I'm the leader for life, and they became just like the oppressed they were fighting. So, and I see this tendency. It's very important. You know, I heard people say, I only read books by Black people. Now, I never heard nothing like that in my life. I'm like, fam, knowledge is knowledge. We don't, no, you know, you read what you read to answer a question. If that white man, Noam Chomsky, has answers to our questions, and he does. If Howard Zinn got answers to our question, and he does. We need to read. Forget, we don't racialize the knowledge. So ideology is becoming very rigid, and that when it does that, it goes into fundamentalism, and that's never ends up good. Now we start imprisoning people who disagree with us and torturing people. I'm not going to get into all that, but we don't want to go that route. So political education not only teaches the basics, but it teaches people, it warns people, let's put things in place so we don't become savages with this. We don't get into these racial purity contests. Who's the real Pan-African? I don't know if that's the question we should answer. We should ask.
Oh my God, please.
So that's my point is political education has to be able to help people say, whoa, we had organizations that got fundamentalists. Cause if not, why would who would kill Malcolm X? That's when an ideology becomes rigid and dogmatic and says, he disagrees, he got to go. And that's not what we pushing. So political education has to teach ethics too. Not just history and politics, ethics. How do we do what we do? How do we make sure that we're righteous in our struggle? We don't become beasts like the person that we're fighting, you know? So that's all I would say. And thank you again for the opportunity to kick it with my brothers and sisters here. I hope I can come back. And I have to invite you guys to come on Harlem Liberation School's platform one of these days as well.
I'm taking invitations. Yes, I am. Yes, sir. yeah, man, we appreciate you, man. And you're welcome, you know, definitely welcome. And I think that what is it that you're doing tomorrow? What's the name of it again?
The beauty and burden of ideology. The beauty and burden ideology. Of ideology.
So sound like the Kiowita philosophy, the best of thought, Black thought and practices and culture, which the Kiowita philosophy draws from. Correct, mm-hmm. Professor Ra?
Yeah.
You go ahead and state it, Professor Rod, because you say it way better than me.
The best of African thought and practices, an ongoing exchange with the world. That's philosophy created by Dr. Malan Kane. Operation Unity, unity with diversity, and unity without uniformity. Principles of cooperation, principles of unity, principles of the ethics. Ethics and values are very important. It should be instituted in young people at an earlier age, as a necessity.
Okay, were you guys able to hear that? Because I wasn't able to hear it well. Were you guys able to hear that?
Couldn't hear some of it at the end.
Yeah, Professor Ra, I couldn't hear it clearly.
But it's the best of African thought and practices. I mean, we draw from all our ancestors and even contemporary people that, as Aja was talking about, as long as they got a solid message and a solid.
Professor Rob, where's your phone? Is it away from you? Because I think that's one of the reasons that I can't hear it clearly what you're
Can you hear me?
saying. That sounds better.
Okay. Well, like I'm saying, it's all about the best of African thought and practice and sensibility, sensitivity, and ongoing exchange with the world, meaning that you have progressive corrections. What you know today may not be true tomorrow, so you have to be able to adjust. The reality is what Ajay was saying, and that is you learn from all sources. I have an issue about we always have to learn from white folks. It's mandatory. It's called public education. One reason we started Black Studies is that they wouldn't let us read Black books. That's when Black Book Bulletin came about, Institute of Positive Education, Third World Press, and things of this nature. This is why we have Black History Month. That's why Carter G. Woodson said we're miseducated. We have to learn from each other's experience. We have to start teaching the kids our struggle. That's why so many of them don't know that we struggle. That what they got going was a result of struggle. It wasn't a result that white folks' life was always the way they have it. Some of them think freedom is the choice between Taco Bell and McDonald's. And that's not freedom. Freedom is the right to be yourself, to be who you are as an African people. So anyway, I think Ajay and his political education platform, the Liberation School, Political Liberation School, is a good thing in New York. They can walk. I mean, they have a rapid
Professor Rod, I can't hear you.
You can't.
So
Go ahead.
we're gonna go ahead and close. And I don't know what's going on with that audio. I even got speakers now so I could hear better on the computer. But
You were hearing me good.
what's that, Professor?
You were hearing me good. You were hearing me good
I
when we
was
first started.
earlier, then it started breaking up, but I don't know if the other people could hear real well, but I could. But we'll come back to it. We on here all the time. So next week, folks, we're not gonna have any shows next week. So it's rare for us to not have shows during the week, but we won't have shows next week. There's some pressing things that's going on next week, and I'm not able to provide shows next week, but we'll be back the week after. And the information will be on the website, who's going to be our guest. So I appreciate everybody this evening, our guest, Brother
What about
Aja.
the reggae show tomorrow? Anything on
No,
that?
no
Nothing.
reggae show tomorrow. No, we probably won't have a reggae show for about 2 to 3 weeks.
Okay.
Yeah, so, yep. So I appreciate again everybody being here. And we're going to keep doing what we're doing. And we definitely going to get politically inclined if we're not already there. So I appreciate you, Brother Ajay. And we'll be in contact. And I definitely want to talk to you offline about some things. I got some ideas
Definitely,
if they're not
definitely.
already implemented. Okay. So each one teach one in Conscious Corner. Everybody continue to have a great day.